We want to pick up where we left off this morning, talking about heavenly Jerusalem. So we'll write that on the board again. So, heavenly Jerusalem, and we were speaking of, I believe we left off this morning in John 18, and we had talked about how that here we have no continuing city. That the kingdom that we are a part of is not something that is based on this earth. It has power over Satan here on earth. And through Christ, we can have that power. He is our king. He was the fulfillment of those promises that there would be a line from David who would be a king, and his kingdom would be forever. And so through Christ, we reign in this life spiritually. And it's a spiritual Jerusalem. It's no longer outwardly, but it's inside. And it can be seen by our actions outwardly, yes. But it's not a continuing city here on earth at all. It's a spiritual kingdom. All right? So we want to pick up tonight with the crowning of our king. And we're going to see him crowned by this world. All right. But I want to give us a little background before we read about his crowning by this world here and how they handled him and how they accepted him. We're also going to see how God accepted him and what God did as a result of his life and what he accomplished here. But before we do, I want to read a verse that tells us exactly what happened in that moment that our king was crowned. So let's look back into Isaiah 26. Yes, the 26th chapter of Isaiah. Sorry, I haven't got very good at doing this. All right, there we are. Okay, it says in 26 and 1, it says, "In that day shall this song be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. Salvation will God appoint for walls and bulwarks." So this verse right here, specifically, it's a prophecy of that day that our king was crowned, that he established the spiritual kingdom. We have a strong city. You know, we walk out into the world and too many times we begin to see things as our eyes are seeing them and the things that are going on. And we can seem like there's so many kingdoms out there that are just having their way and doing what they want to. And by kingdoms, we can mean nations or even just men and power and things like that that are in the world and they're doing what they will and what they want to. But we have a strong city. We're the ones that have the enduring city. And we may go through some things and we will see things not work out like we would like for them to work out because, you know what, our kingdom is not of this world. And this world has no beautiful kingdom like what we're a part of. There's failures and faults and sin and frailties in every nation of this world, every single nation, all of them, including the one we live in. There is sin. There's no nation that is redeemed in this world. It's all destruction. It's all going to be destroyed. None of it, there is not a strong city here. Our strong city is this heavenly kingdom that we're a part of, and it's something we need to see very clearly. We sang a song there about the church having one foundation, elect of every nation, yet one for all the earth. This is the city we're a part of. This is that strong city. This is that kingdom of God. And it has walls and bulwarks. It has a line around it. It has a definition. It's not just people say, well, yeah, I believe everybody's going to heaven. No, there are walls. There's just a simple wall around this city. There's not a bunch of walls. There aren't a bunch of walls inside this city. There's not divisions. There's not meant to be divisions. There are no divisions in this heavenly kingdom, I should say. All right? Man tries to start putting up walls, but you know what man does? To put up walls, to be a part of this kingdom and begin to put up walls, our own walls, is to step on the outside and try to attach something to the wall. You're not going to put walls up inside this kingdom. God will not allow it because it's His city. It's a strong city, and He has put the walls up that He intends, and the only walls that He intends. He made that very clear. He said, I have some other people, and I'm going to go get them. Remember He's talking about the Gentiles? That it may be one fold and one flock. And there is no man that's put walls up inside this city. There's men that have tried to attach them to the outside, but none inside. And so we have these walls, and those walls are salvation. It's a very strong point there, because we know there's salvation, there's sanctification, but when a child of God is born again and is delivered from this world and has salvation has become taken over in their life, they are a part of this kingdom. And they have some growing to do, and they have some learning to do, and they've got some steps to take in their life to continue to grow. And it said, if you follow on, then are you my disciples indeed. All right, so there's a message there that there's some things to grow in right there. But when that soul has been born again, he is a part of this kingdom wherever he is in all the world. And you know, that's a message that will resonate with the soul, because the soul knows the truth of that. It knows what life is. It's not blinded by this world and how we try to fit things in sometimes, and we get so confused because of that. The soul sees clearly what that kingdom is and knows when it's a part of it. And it's been born again into this kingdom and is inside those walls of salvation. So God, we have a strong city. Salvation will God appoint for the bulwarks. And we could go on here, but we just want to kind of set that up a little bit. And we want to turn back over here to John 18 now and just look a little bit at what happened here when our king was crowned. You see how the world accepted him. John 18, and we'll kind of read back over some of what we read this morning maybe to get started here. But this is where he's speaking with Pilate. And Pilate said, 33rd verse said, are you king of the Jews? And so Jesus said, well, who told you that? Pilate said, am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? And Jesus, again, just like he answered Nicodemus, went right to the core of what no doubt was really stirring in Pilate's heart, and said, my kingdom isn't of this world. Yes, I'm a king. I'm a king. That's why I came into this world, as he says in the 37th verse. Thou sayest, I'm a king, and to this end was I born. I am a king. But it's not a kingdom of this world, Pilate. This king, if it was of this world, my servants would fight. They would come. But it's not because I don't have servants, Pilate. It's not because I don't have things at my disposal here to use. Remember the kingdom. What happened here was our way was made into it. The heavenly kingdom has been around from the beginning of time. God has been around. The Word has been around. Christ came and was offered. But he was here with the Lord in the beginning, with the God Jehovah, all right, in the very beginning. And so Jesus is not saying, well, I'm a king, but I'm on my own. So I'm a king, and I'm a king of the strongest city there is, the strongest nation there is, but it's not of this world. It's some of its citizens will reside in this world, and I'm here as its king in this world, and I'm subjecting myself to who you are and to who the chief priests are and to the will that they don't really even understand what's going on in them necessarily, but to their desires and what they're saying to do, and I'm willingly submitting myself to that. But it's not because I don't have servants. It's because my kingdom's not of this world. And this truly, if Jesus would have gone on, he would have said, Pilate, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I'm about to win the greatest victory that's ever been won in the history of mankind. I'm about to be crowned king of this kingdom, and a way's fixed to be made where there are all the inhabitants in heaven are be joined by all these inhabitants on earth. Some that have been waiting and put their faith in this for years before I came, and then many more who will come after and put their faith in me. Pilate, it's not because I don't have servants. It's because my kingdom's not of this world. All right? Yeah. It's a heavenly kingdom. Okay? And so they go on and they pass through that time. And Pilate struggles back and forth. But he makes his decision and says here in John 19:1, "Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. And soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head." Here's how the world crowned him. Now, the one amazing thing about this city is that a lot of the victories we win, the world appears to be crowning us with shame maybe or disgrace, but yet we're walking right through the place the Lord wants us to be, and in that there are victories being won. Christ won the greatest victory, but in that he established a pattern of how a lot of our battles are going to go. They're going to go just like the Lord did here. You know, every time that crown of thorns went into his head and all, and they pushed that there onto his head, the drops of blood that may have fallen down, whatever happened there, the pain, every step of that was a victory that Christ was winning, that his kingdom was being established here on earth. Every scourging that he endured there, and they put on the purple robe, and they said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And all the ones there that thought they were the Jews didn't realize they were just a shadow of what was coming. They all would have drawn back and said, "Don't say that." In fact, they did later, and we'll read that in just a minute. But yeah, he really was the King of the Jews. They weren't telling a story. They didn't realize the truth they were speaking as they said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they smote him. And they were doing the very things that were establishing his kingdom here on this earth, that it can now enter, not just be something that was in heaven, but was a way was being made for it to come here. And all the inhabitants that have put their faith in that and wanted to be a part of that kingdom, for now a way was being made for them to enter in. And so he did all that, and he brought him forth. He said, "I bring him forth to you that you may know I find no fault in him." And Jesus came forth wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said unto them, "Behold the man." The chief priests therefore and the officers saw him. They cried out, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate saith unto them, "Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." Jesus answered, "We have a law, and by our law ye ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid. And he went again into the judgment hall and saith unto Jesus, "Whence art thou?" There's such a struggle going on in Pilate here. He knows there's something that he's not seeing. There's something he can tell. There's something here he's missing. But he's too caught up in this world, and he can't really break free and really see what's happening right in front of him. Something's happening. I know it is. I know, but I can't put my finger on enough to say, "I'm not doing this," or "this has got to stop," or something. And truly, if he had, it's part of why Jesus didn't answer him completely, because if something would have stopped this, then the way would not have been made. The victory would not have been won. All right? And so, but Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate said, "Don't you speak to me? Don't you know I have power to crucify thee and power to release thee?" And Jesus answered, "Thou could have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin." And so I see in this Jesus being quiet, because once again he sees, "Don't you know I have power to crucify thee?" And he said, "Yes," and that's exactly what has to happen here. That's exactly what has to happen. And Pilate, I'd love to answer you. I'd love to maybe say some things, but you're going to have to. You're going to have to let go of some things to be able to see it. I can't tell you right now, because this is necessary that I go through here, that I establish this kingdom and open up the way for the citizens here to become a part of it. "For thenceforth Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was brought Jesus forth and set down in the judgment seat in a place that was called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover, and about the sixth hour. And so he makes his decision, but he's like, there's something here. He's not letting go of this. And you know, truly, this is that God orchestrated all this. He said, "Behold your king." Pilate was saying things again that he didn't realize he was saying, because Jesus truly was not only their king, he was the fulfillment of all that their scriptures that they based their kingdom on, of everything about it, this was the fulfillment of that. This was what it all pointed to. This was truly their king. But he was also king of the world. He was king of every soul that was looking there. And they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said unto them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." We're stopping here. All the prophets have said, pointed to this man. But we're relinquishing the transition here, and we're clinging to this world. We're clinging to Caesar. We have no king but Caesar. There was a choice made there that people don't even realize they're making. But Christ was standing there as their king. "Then delivered he them therefore unto them to be crucified. And they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him, and two other with him on either side one, and Jesus in the midst. And Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. This title then read many of the Jews, for the place where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin." Every language, so people could read this and see this. All right. "And they said, write not king, the King of the Jews, but that he said, I am the King of the Jews. But Pilate answered, what I have written, I have written. Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." There's a reason why this was on that cross. Because he was the King of the Jews. He was the king that had been prophesied, pointed to, and no matter what they wanted to say, they were coming to this moment. And it's like he said, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how many times would I have gathered you under my wings, chicks, but you would not, therefore it's left you desolate." Why? This wasn't just another time where they rejected a prophet or something like that, and he's just giving them a comment that you shouldn't have done that. This was the Messiah. All the things, all the failures you had, you're coming to a moment where your final decision is being made. Are you going to accept what all of your scripture said, that this is your king and now we are transitioning? He will be your king forevermore. Everything else pointed to him. Are you going to come through this transition and now be a Jew in the sense that it was always meant to be? All that you pointed to, here's the chance to be what it was always meant to be. What's your decision? There's no other alternative. This had to be written on the cross because he was the King of the Jew, the one that was prophesied to be king forever. And no longer is anyone a Jew outwardly. But at this moment, if you're going to be a Jew, it's an inward kingdom that we can be a part of. Now, I know there's people who walk around with the name Jews, but in the sense of the word and what God always meant with that nation, it's all been fulfilled in Christ. And now we enter into heavenly Jerusalem as a Jew inwardly. All right. With our king who was crowned here, Jesus Nazareth, the King of the Jews. All right. Now, I wanted to turn over into, and there's a verse. Oh, I know. I want to read in Daniel, the second chapter. Daniel, the second chapter. And this is the dream. If you remember that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and he threatened to kill all the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, all the wise men of his kingdom. He got so upset he didn't even search through all of them. When the ones that came told him this isn't possible, he said, well, then I'm just getting rid of all of you. And so he went out calling ones who weren't even there. And he happened to go call on Daniel. And Daniel and his friend said, hey, whoa, wait a minute. What's going on here? And so I explained it to him, and Daniel said, well, give us some time, and we'll give the king an answer and all. And so they went to prayer, and the Lord revealed to Daniel in the nighttime what the dream was. And so he told him, take me to him. And he came before the king and said, the king said, are you able to explain this to me? And Daniel said, you know what? What you've asked, no man can do, but there is a God in heaven that can do this. And so here's your dream. And so in the 29th verse, it says, as for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed. What should come to pass hereafter? And he that revealeth secrets make maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. And then we drop on down to the 31st verse, and it says, Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. And thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them in pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold, broken into pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, and there was no place found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. All right, this is the dream. We will tell the interpretation thereof to before the king. And in interest of time, I would read it all, but I want to ask you just to read it. It's a story we know, but this was a story of all the kingdoms of the earth coming up to the time that Christ came. And how there was kingdoms that would have the highest level of power. You know, here was this power, here was this power, here was this power. Each one with its time having the control of the earth, so to speak. But then there would come a kingdom. There would come a rock that was hewn out, what does it say, was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them into pieces. And the wind carried them away. No place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Mount Zion. This is Mount Zion. We came in this moment that Christ was crucified and the chance for salvation went out to all the earth. The power of all the kingdoms of the earth was destroyed. We have a strong city. They will continue on and they will be here on earth and they will battle back and forth and there will be this kingdom and that kingdom and a kingdom over here. But there's a kingdom that's been established that supersedes all of those kingdoms. It's not defined by the lines of any of those kingdoms. It's defined by faith in Jesus Christ. And wherever a soul is that puts his faith in this kingdom, in this salvation through Jesus Christ, he can enter into this kingdom and is a part of this kingdom through those walls of salvation. Those are the only walls set up by Christ. Anyone who would believe and follow after Christ can become a part of this nation and be a part of this heavenly kingdom. And there's no kingdom on earth that has power over it. Let's say, but there are many things done by the nations of this earth to those who have followed after Christ. But not one of them happened without Christ saying, like he said to Pilate, he said, you could have no power over me except it was given you from above. What's happening here, Pilate, is only happening because my Father wills it to happen. You don't have the power to make it happen or to stop it, Pilate, because I'm walking in the will of my Father for his will, for his purpose. Therefore, you have no power over this. This is strictly the things you're doing, you're only able to do them because my Father's allowing them to happen. That's what happened in that moment for all of us. That's the city we're a part of, where if we follow after and we're a part of this kingdom, there may be things happen to us. We have, as part of being this kingdom, Christ had to be willing to suffer to be crowned king of this kingdom. All right, but he was willing to. And it's the same pattern in our life. The fact that this is the most powerful kingdom there is doesn't mean that we're not going to be suffering in this life, because part of the way we gain victories, remember, every scourge, every thorn, everything that was pierced into the nails that pierced his hands, every bit of pain that he suffered was part of the victory that he won. And it's the same way we win victories in this life as we follow the Lord and walk with him. So I want to look over here in Luke 24. Luke 24 and 17th verse. This is the story where he walked on them on the walk with them on the road to Emmaus. And I just think about this story tonight, and I hope you caught the theme here. That I pray that our vision would be bright, We go through suffering, and sometimes the devil tries to tell us, see, you're not really all that powerful, are you? I can do whatever I want. You know, if you're following the Lord, suffering's a part of it sometimes. Going through hard places is a part of it, but you're going through it by the power of God. And there is not a man on earth anywhere that can make anything happen to you unless God wills it. But God will some suffering in your life. It says in one place, before I was afflicted, I went astray. See, God's not looking for you to be glorified in this life at all. It says, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up in due time. The Lord's working for your eternal glory, and it's going to cost you some things in this life. And there's going to be times where the world crowns you with the crown of thorns, so to speak, and it scourges you, and you look like a piece of something shameful in their eyes, that and all, that it's certainly not a part of the most powerful kingdom on earth at all. But yet that's where the Lord's given you victory, and where you're walking in that heavenly kingdom with him as you walk with his will. And so there were some people here that were struggling with that. They're like, if he's king, we shouldn't be sitting here running around scared to death because they just crucified our king. That was kind of their thoughts. What's going on here? And so they say, what manner of communications, Jesus says to them, what manner of communications are these that you have one to another as you walk and are sad? And one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered and said, are you a stranger? Haven't you heard what's happened? And he said, well, what things have happened? They said to him, well, Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and have crucified him. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. He did. He did. He was what all the prophets talked about. He opened the gates for all of Israel, for all of this heavenly kingdom, the citizens that were here on earth, for all of us to enter in who would believe in his name. All right, but they weren't seeing that. They were trapped in what looked like had happened in this world and the way that the world had crowned their king. All right, we trusted it would have been him that should have redeemed Israel. Besides all this, today is the third day since these things were done. They came look for his body and somebody's taken him away. And then 25th verse, he said unto them, O fools and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to have entered into his glory? And he, beginning at Moses and all the prophets, expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself, that point to the fact that this is exactly what should have happened, because it's not a kingdom of this world. He came to establish a heavenly kingdom. Not to establish it, it always existed, but to open up the door for all who would believe and had put their faith in this salvation to enter into this heavenly kingdom, and that it now would reside on earth. You remember how he said, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven? The power he had on earth was destroyed in that moment because of that way that was made for us to enter into this kingdom, this victorious kingdom, this mighty kingdom. The most mighty kingdom there is and ever will be. There will never be another kingdom like this on earth. Never has been, never will be. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things, to have entered into his glory so that this could happen for us. All right. It says Philippians 2 and 6. Let's look over there and we'll read this in closing. Philippians 2 and 6, 2 and 5 says, let this mind be in you, which also is in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal of God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in likeness of man. He was there the whole time. He was in heaven, and he chose to come and to be our king and to suffer these things. He made himself of no reputation. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross, where the world crowned him as they saw him and didn't realize what had just happened. All right. Wherefore, God had a crowning for Jesus. All right. Wherefore God also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven, things in earth, things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So the world crowned Jesus. And they thought, this is how we crown him. This is who he is. You know, today is the same way. The world's crowning Jesus. This is who he is. But he's not. They're stuck behind that wall, behind that transition to realize that there is a heavenly kingdom that now we can be a part of, that there are citizens of it walking around on this earth. And they don't behave like citizens of this earth behave, because they're part of a different kingdom that's not of this world. And they have a power the citizens of this world don't have, because they're part of a kingdom that's not of this world. All right? And they have a king the citizens of this world are under subjection, then don't even realize it, but aren't experiencing any of the benefits. One day will be destroyed, because it says, if we read, starting this all off in the Psalms there, how he would destroy all of his enemies and all. Well, that's the souls that don't choose to become a part of this kingdom. There's only so long that the Lord's going to let this world go on. And I would love to see, when it comes that time, that somehow the whole world decided to believe in Jesus. But there's going to be those who see him as this world is crowning. Lord, help me that I don't see him that way. But I see him as God crowning. That he has the name and authority above every name, because that's what the reality is. That he does have that. And when I believe in his name, I have that power in my life to live as he would have me to live and have victory over this life, where I'm not bound by it anymore. And I could go on and on to all of what that means to us. But Lord, help us not to be blinded by this world, but to see Jesus for who he is, and to see the kingdom we're a part of for what it is. Yes. You pray for me.